It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Hola, welcome to the show today. It's 6 minutes after 10 at 203-333-9422. Call me at 203-333-9422. That's our number. And Governor Lamont is going to be joining us at 10:30. So we will get into the details with him about his plan and about the realistic opportunities to pass it, given the way the Republicans, the Democrats feel about the aspect of the plan that seems to get the most attention, and that is tolls, and whether or not in a multi-billion dollar plan in which tolls are expected to raise $300 million, can we possibly get the plan done without tolls so that everybody can be happy about it? 203-333-9422. Anyway, we'll ask Governor Lamont that. I'm also curious to know from him about what he makes of the introduction of Michael Bloomberg into the presidency contest. So Michael Bloomberg, three-time mayor of New York City, self-made billionaire, considered to be, believe it or not, topping $50 billion as one of, I don't know, the top 20 or top 10 richest human beings on earth. He stands tall at about 5'7". He was born and raised, I don't know where he was born, but he was raised in Newton, Massachusetts. He's a New England kind of a boy. He named the Children's Hospital at Johns Hopkins University the Charlotte Bloomberg Hospital after his mom. He's a Jewish man. He's a man who made his way as a trader at Salomon Brothers when there was a Salomon Brothers, and at the time it was one of the most prestigious organizations. And the way that Michael Bloomberg made his fortune, he made a fortune as a trader. Obviously, he was a very, very bright man in the world of finance. But what he saw was an opportunity to deliver information faster than anybody else. So he left Salomon Brothers and he started a company, and the company became a noun adjective, the way Band-Aid is a noun adjective, right? So Band-Aid is a trademark, but we think about a Band-Aid as the thing that we use in when we have a boo-boo, right? We cover it up with a Band-Aid, or we ask for a Kleenex, which a Kleenex is really a tissue, but it's a brand name. But it's such a brand that it became the name of the noun itself. Well, getting a Bloomberg became its own noun because Bloomberg started a company that was able to deliver faster information to financial traders via a computer called the Bloomberg than any other informational resource. And he sold the technology, the hardware and the software. The hardware was the computer. The software was the information on the computer that enabled traders in the world of finance to get information about companies that they were following faster and more accurately than others. It soon became a requisite. If you were going to be trading on Wall Street, you needed a Bloomberg. Some people had two or three on their desk. And the brilliance of Bloomberg was that his subscription model was not you buy it and that's it. It was that you lease it, which means you pay forever, forever and ever and ever, forever and a day. So Bloomberg amassed a fortune as somebody who understood the value of information. And then after he was a billionaire many times over, he said, you know what? This city that I love, New York City, which is my home now, that I really do love and I'm passionate about, we need to continue good government. And so Rudolph Giuliani really was the game changer in terms of the before and after of thinking about Manhattan in particular, outlying boroughs eventually. But it began with Manhattan, thinking about Manhattan as a safer place for people to live and walk and breathe and be at night. And those of us who are old enough to remember Manhattan when it wasn't safe have to remember that there were decades in which it wasn't safe. And Rudolph Giuliani, with his broken windows policy and Bill Bratton at the helm of the police department, and yes, barricading up City Hall, which I never liked, but basically radically changed the police attitude towards petty crime, believing that if you policed the broken windows, that a lot of the other crimes of assault would eventually decrease. And it turned out to be true. That is what happened. A lot of people think that there are different causes for that same effect, but that is, in fact, what happened. And so what happened was Mark Green was going to be the next mayor of New York after Rudolph Giuliani served two terms and famously wanted a third after 9/11, but he didn't get it. And so Mark Green was going to be the next mayor of New York because he was the Democrat. And it was an anomaly that Rudolph Giuliani was elected as a Republican. I mean, you've got millions of voters, a tiny, tiny percentage of them are registered Republicans. So what happened was Mark Green was going to be the Democratic nominee and everybody who cared about Manhattan and New York City were fretting. I can't believe after 8 years of Rudolph Giuliani, we're going to go back to the Dinkins Beam failed policies of New York that basically rolled out the red carpet for criminals. And the thinking was that Mark Green was not going to be able to run the city. So in came Michael Bloomberg, who had been a Democrat his whole life. But he said, you know what? I'm not going to get elected as a Democrat. Mark Green's got the nomination lined up. But if I register as a Republican, well, that's an open field. So he registered as a Republican and he ran and won. He won. He beat Mark Green as a Republican. And then once he was mayor for two terms, the city council had passed a law that said that two terms was the max for any mayor in the city of New York. And Mayor Bloomberg said to himself and everybody who would listen, I think I need another term. I think I should be entitled to another 4 years. I'm the best mayor that New York City ever had. And so he finagled with the city council that he would be the last mayor in New York history to be able to qualify for a third term. It was sort of an ugly thing he did, but he did it. And he got his third term. And then he went back into private life. And he has been focusing a lot of his vast wealth on reducing gun violence and on other things that he really cares about. So last week, we talked about the fact that he had made inroads. He had gotten on the ballot in Alabama before the deadline for getting on the ballot had passed, which made everybody look up a notice and think, is he serious about running? And then on Friday, he devoted millions of dollars to a voter registration campaign in the swing battleground states to try and get Democrats to register in places like Madison, Wisconsin, which is a liberal bastion of Wisconsin, to not miss any possible votes that might vote for a Democrat because they're not registered in time. And then we read over the weekend that he had spent $31 million, the most amount of money ever spent in such a short time, in this first 2 weeks, because now he's officially running for president. Now, what does that do to Joe Biden? 203-333-9422. What does the introduction of Michael Bloomberg into the presidential race do to Joe Biden? Michael Bloomberg is running essentially as a centrist. He's running as somebody who has been a Republican and a Democrat and a pragmatist. And he is antithetical to Donald Trump in many, many ways, particularly style and a lot of substance. Michael Bloomberg believes that climate change is a reality and that we have to grapple with it, adapt to it, and try and prevent further degradation of our environment. He adamantly believes in the reduction of gun violence, big time, and he's willing to try and pass laws that will advance that agenda. But he's not a socialist. He's not going to nationalize healthcare, that's for sure. He's a pragmatist. So what does that do to Joe Biden? And is he likable enough? He's a short Jewish billionaire from the Northeast. Is anybody going to vote for him in Peoria? 203-333-9422. We will go to the phones. Let's go to George from Stratford. Hi, George. Welcome to the show today. Hello.
Yeah, how you doing? I called you last week, and this is nothing about what you're currently speaking. I had mentioned this supposed Joe Biden quid pro quo, and you seemed, where did you find that? You didn't hear about that?
Oh, I do remember that call. Thank you, George. Yes, well, I do.
Do you want to know how to find out?
Yeah, sure.
In other words, if you go on Google,
yes,
and type in Joe Biden quid pro quo, however you say it,
I'll do it over the commercial break. Let me see what comes up.
I'm not done. You got more to do. Joe Biden quid pro with Ukraine.
Okay.
Then tap on to Joe Biden on Ukraine $1 billion.
All right. Let's see what I find. Thank you,
I'm
George.
Going out,
for the call.
I'm going out now, so I don't know if I'd hear your response, if any. But if you could mention it in the last half hour or so, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, George.
Just for your own information.
Sure. 15 minutes after 10, 203-333-9422, a conversation with Governor Lamont coming up at 10:30. Other thing I want to talk about, we're going to have somebody who was actually at the Harvard-Yale game call in the next hour, Max Sklar, who is a graduate of Yale and who now lives in, I think he's in Brooklyn, but he might be in Manhattan. Anyway, but he still has a tremendous affinity for his alma mater, and he went to the game, and Max Sklar is also a host of his own radio podcast, so I'm dying to hear from him to report in on what it was like to be there. If you were there, I want to hear from you at the Harvard-Yale game. The proceeding was interrupted for 40 minutes, meaning that the double overtime game, Harvard-Yale game, actually did not end until almost dark. And according to the insider at the Norwalk Hour, there was a lot of detailed planning and training in nonviolent protest, as well as a decoy that led up to the successful protest. 42 students and alum of both Yale and Harvard, including Sam Waterston of Law and Order fame and of the Yale class of 62, were given summonses on charges of disorderly conduct and misdemeanor. They led a sit-down on the field. And there were many organizations involved, but the two that are getting the most press are the Yale Endowment Justice Coalition and Divest Harvard. And what they want, if you're asking, well, what's this all about? What this is about is the endowments of Yale and Harvard are multi-billions. Frankly, they could fund a lot of small countries. And personally, the idea that they still charge any dollars for admission for their students is, to me, gross. With the kind of endowments and the interest on the endowments they have, it should be a no-brainer. If you're smart enough to get into Harvard and Yale, you shouldn't have to pay for the privilege. That's my opinion. But nonetheless, the activists at Harvard and Yale know that to the extent there are millions and billions of dollars at stake in investments, they want that money divested from corporations that they think contribute to the worsening of the planet's environment. They want them out. They want them out of investing in fossil fuel companies. They want them out of investing in fracking companies. They want them out of investing in companies that are part of the problem. And they want them in investing in companies that are part of the solution. We'll get into more of that right after we return. The Lisa Wexler Show, 203-333-9422 at 18 minutes after the hour. And welcome back to the show, 203-333-9422. It's 21 minutes after 10 o'clock at 203-333-9422. And Governor Ned Lamont will be joining us at 10:30. So I'd like you to be thinking about what you want to say to the governor, what you want to ask the governor. Because the reason he's coming back on the show is because he wants to hear from you. He can hear from me any minute of any day. What am I? He really wants to hear from you. Because when you think about it, when you're up in office, no matter what office it is, you inevitably you're surrounded by a little bit of an echo chamber. You can't help it. It's part and parcel of the office. First of all, you have your advisors. Then you have people around you who want something from you. And then when you're at public events, you have people very often, you have no idea what their outside agenda may be, or it may be that someone who's listening in an audience is a little too intimidated to really say what they think to a public official in public. But, you know, you're in your car, you're in your living room, you're in your kitchen, you're in your den, you've got your feet up, and you can think about what you want to say to our governor and how you want to phrase it, and it'll be genuine and authentic. So the reason Governor Lamont is coming back on the show isn't about answering questions from me. He can do that, you know, a dime a dozen. He wants to come on to hear from you. So 203-333-9422 is our number, and at 10:30 you'll have the opportunity to ask him a question. If you want to call in sooner and just queue up for that, Christian will keep you on, and we will keep the lines open for you so that you can, in fact, be on the air with Governor Lamont at 10:30. This is an important time in his administration. The second session of his administration is going to be starting soon. It is widely recognized that if he is going to get something done, this would be the opportune session in order to do it. And I think hearing from you will really help him. 203-333-9422. So, Christian, I see the calls are coming in. If they're for the governor, just let the people wait. And when he comes on, they will have their chance. All right, let's talk about some other things going on. So I wanted to give you a little more insight. If you're calling about the, if you want to talk about the Harvard-Yale game. So the idea is that this was not a spontaneous demonstration. That what happened at the Harvard-Yale game reportedly was 1.5 months of planning, including studying online maps of the bowl, training with experts in nonviolent direct action protests, and practicing running onto the field and jumping over walls. A total of 148 students and alum from Yale and Harvard were willing to be arrested and were trained in how to respond to police. Kim said some officers treated protesters roughly. Some were picked up and thrown on the ground. But, you know, you're going to have to need to expect that. One of the protesters said, "I was grabbed in a way that I felt uncomfortable with. Police pressed a taser against another protester, though it was not used. However, those who sat on the field were only one part of the overall protest because a lot of people who wanted a protest were not risk an arrest. Because particularly if you were an international student, your visa would be put at risk. So for the people that were not willing to be arrested, they led chants from the stands. They protested outside the bowl. They reached out to alumni. And they reached out to alumni to get their sympathy because they wanted they didn't want there to be a backlash of money or of stopping money because of the protests of the students. One student acted as a decoy and ran down the tunnel used by the visiting team, a, quote, fake action to draw attention away from the staircases. The coalition members displayed 5 large banners on the field during the protest. They managed to get them into the bowl where security checks are set up at the gates. The arrested protesters were then brought through the visitors' tunnel into an area outside the bowl where others were rallying and chanting." And this is a little bit from the insider scoop in the Norwalk Hour today. And one of the protesters said that they thought that the size of the crowd on the field was about 300. Many additional students and alum joined in, quote, "in solidarity and high awareness for the things we were demanding. This is the first time that the Yale Coalition had planned a protest with another university, and obviously the Harvard-Yale game is one of the highlights of the entire football season. And I guess these students really felt very good about it. Harvard University freshman Connor Chung of Bethlehem, New York, rushed the field on Saturday, said he was anxious how the protest would play out, and it was kind of terrifying, but being on the field was a powerful experience. And with surprising endorsements coming from far and wide, including from Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bill McKibben, environmentalists, Cornell West, according to the Yale Investment Office's ethical investment policy, the office has asked Yale's endowment managers not to hold companies that refuse to acknowledge the social and financial costs of climate change, and that, quote, fail to take economically sensible steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They also want Yale to get out of Puerto Rico. They want Yale not only to get out of Puerto Rico, they want Yale to forgive the debt that is owed by Puerto Rico. They feel sorry for Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico's a mess financially. So the students believe that that Yale should just walk away from it. They should just write it off as a loss, not only divesting from Puerto Rico, but basically saying, you know what, we acknowledge that you're not going to pay us back. We forgive the debt and let's move on. 203-333-9422. Harvard's endowment is the nation's largest. Would you believe that Harvard has $40.9 billion as of June 30th, and Yale is at $30.3 billion, third largest after the University of Texas, which beats Yale in between. A non-Ivy League has $31 billion, but after all, it is Texas. So this is really something. I mean, if you think about what's happening at Yale is an echo of the 60s protests that swept the country in opposition to the Vietnam War. And when you have, I'm a big believer in this, look at Hong Kong, look what's going on. When you have protests that come from the bottom up, that's when the politicians respond. Look what's happening with tolls. It's bottom up. It's not top down. When you have bottom up protests, That's when the politicians have to respond. They have no choice. When they see protesters in the streets, when they see supporter protesters in the streets. If climate change was not almost universally acknowledged as a reality, this would have backfired on Yale. And it would have backfired on Harvard. And the alums would have called and they would have said, what are these radical kids interrupting our football game for? I'm taking my money out. What are you allowing this for? But I think the tide has changed, pun intended. The tide has changed. The tide has overflowed. And now climate change and climate change protests are becoming not only a reality, but they're becoming a universally recognized call to action. It is 10:30. I'm Lisa Wexler. The call lines are filling up. Please stay on. We're going to take you in the order that you have been received. Governor Lamont will be joining us shortly on the Lisa Wexler Show at WICC 600 and WICC600.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the show. Governor Ned Lamont joining us momentarily. And we appreciate the callers that are holding. Just stay on. I promise we will get to all of you. 203-333-9422. Before Governor Lamont comes on the show, I just want to talk movies for a little bit. Frozen 2 heated up the box office with $127 million on its opening weekend. And, you know, everybody I know that hasn't already seen it once or twice says that I need to go see it. So I'm going to go see it. Apparently, it's a big hit. It's got new music, so it's really, really cool. The other thing is I'm hearing the must-go-to movie to see is Jojo Rabbit. Jojo Rabbit is apparently some kind of brilliant satire, so I really want to see that one as well. And what's the third one? Oh, and the other one that everyone wants to see or wants me to see is the Christian Bale movie, the race car movie. I forgot who he's... Who is he co-starring with? Is it, it's not Brad Pitt. I feel like it should be Brad Pitt, but it isn't Brad Pitt. Christian, is it Matt Damon maybe? Maybe it's Matt Damon. Anyway, it's some kind of guys. I love Christian Bale. Whatever Christian Bale is in, I want to see. Guy is such an unbelievably brilliant actor. And you know what? He mixes it up. Christian Bale. You know, he mixes it up from character roles to dark places to light places to funny places. So anyway, I can't wait to see that movie. Well, joining us now is Governor Ned Lamont, and Governor Lamont is joining us here on the Lisa Wexler Show. We've got so many people queued up who want to speak with him at 203-333-9422. Just as a quick catch up, Governor Lamont submitted a $21+ billion financial transportation overhaul of our transportation system, and that was met with pretty wide acclaim, and the Republicans liked most of it. They didn't like the toll part, and they countered with a plan of their own that figures out a way to take some money from the current rainy day fund and pay down some debt, which will in turn hopefully decrease the amount of interest that Connecticut has to pay on that debt, and they've reached a way that they think they can get to most of what Governor Lamont wants without imposing tolls. And then the Democrats in the legislature came back with their proposal that only proposes to toll trucks. And all of this is happening in the wake of a lot of conversation with the overriding need that we all acknowledge to build up our buses, our trains, and fix our highways, particularly the bottlenecks. Governor Lamont, thank you so much for coming back on the show. At this moment, we have no less than 5 people on hold waiting to speak with you. Thanks for coming back on the show. Hi, Governor.
Hey, Lisa. A, it's great to be back. B, the movie is Ford versus Ferrari. It is Matt Damon. It's a great movie.
Is it a great movie?
It's not a guy's movie. It's a great story.
Okay.
I haven't seen a movie in a year. This is the first one I've seen. I loved it. And Bale is fabulous.
He's never bad in anything. Oh, he's such a good actor. And you know, Matt Damon's smile, it's just a killer smile. You can just go to the movies just to see him smile. So it's good. It's good. All right. So you know what, Governor? Of course, I have a million things I want to ask you, but I know that you're on because you want to hear from the people. So I'm just going to go to the phones. Okay with you?
You got it.
All right, let's go to the phones. We're going to go in order that they were received first. Nicholas from Fairfield. Hi, Nicholas. You're on the air with Governor Lamont.
Hey, Governor. How are you doing today?
Hey, Nicholas.
How's everything going?
Happy Thanksgiving to you, man.
Oh, very nice. So I was just wondering, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, what works, you know, you stick with it. So I'm wondering why its first conclusion to jump to raise taxes other than cutting programs that, you know, we see people taking advantage of and maybe don't need them so much.
Nicholas, do you have a specific question for Governor Lamont? A specific question or a specific comment on his budget? I mean, on his proposal for transportation? A specific one?
Yeah. I think, you know, you see less and less people using the train systems, you know, as you're using them. And it costs, you know, it costs a lot of money to run them. And you don't really see, you know, the rainy day fund being put into action as much as it's talked about.
Thank you, Nicholas. Thank you for the comment. Do you have a word for Nicholas, Governor?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, on taxes and spending, I'm the first governor in a generation that didn't raise income tax rates, didn't raise sales tax rates. We held the line, and that while confronted with an enormous deficit. And Nicholas, what's the cause of that deficit? You know, you can say it's, you know, too many programs, but really, we just keep borrowing. We just keep borrowing, and all those dues are coming in, be it pensions, be it transportation. So one of the things I really want to do is not take from the rainy day fund, not do transportation just by more borrowing, which is paid for 100% plus interest all by the people of Connecticut. And borrowing is just another form of taxation. It just does it over a longer period of time. I'm saying no to that, and I've got a transportation plan in place that fixes our system without more borrowing, without raiding the rainy day fund.
Let's go to Chuck from Middlebury. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air with Governor Ned Lamont.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Hey, Chuck.
My question to you. I'm a big proponent of tolls here, or opponent, I'm sorry. If you don't get your tolls, what else do you have in your plans?
If we don't, I got to fix a transportation system that's going bankrupt, Chuck. I like it more when you said proponent, but you know, right now all they do is borrow money.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm kidding you. So what I don't want to do is borrow more money to fix this, which is what one of the other plans are. And I think that's a lousy way to go. You know, we'll just have to bring back more ideas. But this is a legislature that has been kicking this can for, you know, many decades now. And I just don't want them to kick it anymore. You know, bigger. What else are we going to do? We're going to lean up government. We're going to see how we can get more done with fewer people. We're going to upgrade our workforce so that we don't have thousands of jobs we can't fill because we're not training people for those jobs. So I got to do that at the same time. Nothing more important, Chuck.
Chuck, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you. So Governor Lamont, with the back and forth, and I think Chuck raises a good point, which is, you know, for the people that are against tolls, they want to know, oh, we lost the governor. How did that happen? Hopefully we'll get him back. 203-333-9422. Christian, do you have the number? Yeah, here, he's calling right back. He's right back. I can see him. I can see him on my magic board. 203-333-9422. We've opened up some lines if you want to ask some questions for Governor Lamont. Otherwise, we're going to continue the conversation. Hi, Governor, you back?
I'm back.
Okay, great. So, Governor Lamont, so last time we spoke, your plan wasn't fully out and the Republicans wasn't fully back and the Democrats have seemed to retreat in the legislature on the idea of tolling everyone. They've gone back to something that you originally in your campaign wanted to get done. Do you think that the tolls of trucks only will be where we end up, given that the legislature has said they're willing to do that?
Yeah, we got to do something, that's for sure. And so trucks only, couldn't do that under the original plans that were out there. But you could do it if it's just specific to different bridges, and every dime of that electronic user fee goes to pay down the debt we get from the federal government. And that would be helpful. It doesn't solve for world peace, but it'd be helpful. And we've got to make sure we get at least that done.
You know, I had a specific question. We had last Friday, we had Melissa Kaplan. I think her last name is Macy. That was on. I think she was on your transportation board. Anyway, she is on the regional transportation board, and she told us that only 2 out of every 4 tracks right now on Metro North are able to be used because fully 2 of the other 4 are not able to be used because of the fact that they are, you know, maintenance challenged. And I was really, really surprised about that. And I was wondering,
100-year-old infrastructure.
Yeah.
Lisa. And, you know, she knows more than specifics. I think she's the Regional Plan Association.
Yes.
But you're right. I've got to slow up the train going over these 90-year-old bridges.
Yeah.
We have tracks that have to be straightened out. We could take 15 minutes off your commute. Tell, you know, Nicholas, 15 minutes off the rail commute from Fairfield down to New York, or 15 minutes off his driving commute down to Stanford if we just can get, you know, rail and clean up some of the bottlenecks on I-95.
And
you know, we're not adding a new lane. We're not redesigning the world, but we are fixing some things that have been long overdue.
I have a question for you. Do you remember recently the DOT said it's going to be painful, but it's going to be short? And so what they did was they closed up around exit 9 of 95 for 2 weekends because they had some urgent work that needed to be done. They told everyone, they said, it's going to be a mess on this Saturday. It's going to be a mess on next Saturday, but we promise it's going to get done. And they got it done. My question for you in seeing that actually happen is, do you think that that's preferable to, you know, the endless repaving of the Merritt Parkway where they never really close it, but they slow it down interminably? Which approach do you personally prefer the DOT to take?
I think what they did on I-95 is an example of what we can do around the state. And right now it costs us, you know, more every year to patch that 90-year-old bridge. What they did on I-95 there, it was just 2 weekends.
Right.
They assembled the bridge off premise in 2 weekends. So it was the minimal of delay.
I liked it.
Is what we can do around the state. And same thing a little bit. This is not right near neck of the woods, but I-84 between Waterbury and Hartford.
What an ugly thing that is.
We didn't have to add on a new lane for the entire thing, but we fixed that 2.5-mile bottleneck. That's saving people almost half an hour of commute time each way every day.
Amazing. Yeah, we need to do it. Let's go to Steve from Bridgeport. Steve, you're on the air with Governor Lamont.
Hey, Steve. My question is, basically, I think of the state as my own house, right? If I was a governor, how do we pay these bills? I would think if we give up $100, say every Connecticut taxpaying resident gave up $100 to the state, and then we started a fund, and if you paid down some of the equities with that, wouldn't that, like, free up a lot more money so you can do your transportation budget or that would help out? Because if my lights were going to get turned off, I'd go to everybody in the house and say, hey, I need $100 from everybody to keep the lights on. What are we going to do? And, you know, if you did something like that as a one-time deal and you came up with a plan, something similar to that, I think every Connecticut resident would be like, okay, we need $200. Here goes your $200. I'm done. And you work it out from there. Instead of doing it tolls, where it's like an open-ended check, where it's just an open-ended thing, and it never stops.
So sort of like an assessment on your condo versus a maintenance increase. I get it. All right, so what do you say to that,
Governor? I hear you. I wish it was just a one-shot deal to fix you know, I-95 in Bridgeport, and get you faster rail service from Bridgeport down to Stanford. One thing you want to do, like it's your own house, I have a plan where out-of-staters will pay for 40%. Why does Connecticut have to pay 100% of the amount plus interest? Let's get those out-of-staters, those out-of-state tractor trailer trucks. They pay about 40% of the total. If you could get somebody to pay 40% of what it takes you, Steve, to fix up your house, I think you'd take it. And that's the plan we got.
We're going to go. Thank you, Steve, for the call. We've got so many people who want to talk to you, Governor. Let's go to Janet from Easton. Hi, Janet. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with Governor Ned Lamont. Hi.
Hi. My question to the governor is, if the transportation is in such trouble, and it is, why is the weigh station in Greenwich not open all the time?
Thank you, Janet.
Well, the two are slightly unrelated, but the weigh stations are there to protect us in terms of truck safety. There are more and more tractor trailer trucks there. A lot of these guys are doing very long hauls, and we've got to patrol that in a serious way. You know, it costs money to keep them open, but we also pay for it with a lot of fines. So I think, to your point, I don't know why they're not open more often. I would look into that and get back to you.
Governor Lamont, I have another question for you for a little bit. 203-333-9422 to be on the air to speak to your governor on the Lisa Wexler Show. You've been supporting Joe Biden. You had this tremendously successful fundraiser for him at your house. And I want to know what you think the impact of Michael Bloomberg entering the presidential race is on Joe Biden, because he's positioning himself as another centrist alternative to Joe Biden. I'm curious what you make of all this, Governor.
I think Joe Biden is somebody that can bring this country together. I think he speaks to the middle class, which has gotten hammered in this country over the last generation. You're right, we did a event for him here at my house, and what I loved is there were a lot of Republicans, there were a lot of independents there, not just Democrats, and that's what you need to bring this country together.
But do you
know, with Deval Patrick and Mike Bloomberg, like they're all really good folks. I know them a little bit.
Yeah. Well, do you think they think that Bloomberg can capture, I mean, politically, you're a pretty savvy political guy. You think Bloomberg has any chance of capturing votes in a primary?
I think that he's going to put tens of millions, if not a lot more than that, in there. And to the degree to which people say defeating Donald Trump is of paramount importance, and this guy has the firepower to compete, and he's was a pretty good mayor, let's face it. He was a pretty good mayor.
He was a pretty good mayor.
So, you know, I think he'll do okay. But at the end of the day, does he really connect with the middle class of this country? Time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the open question, right? I mean, to me, it's fascinating that he's putting so much money behind voter registration campaigns in battleground states, because that's going to the essence of Donald Trump's strategy for victory the first time. Only the battleground states. Only the battleground states. I wonder,
get people to vote, encourage them to vote, make it easier to vote, have more early voting. I mean, why do you want to discourage people from voting? So I'm with Bloomberg on that.
Do you think, Governor Lamont, that we should, for the Electoral College, do you think that we should move, and we can do this in a state as a state-by-state thing, that we should move to a proportional representation so that the minority voters at least have a stake, that it's not winner-take-all for a presidential campaign?
I think that makes pretty good sense to me, Lisa. Let's face it, the entire national election is fought out in four or five states, and all the other ones are very blue or very red.
Yeah.
And candidates don't really bother. So if you had some proportional representation, they'd come to Connecticut and make their case.
I think so. I would like them to come here not just to ask for money, but also to ask for votes. I agree with that. We're going to go to one more call. Governor Lamont, you've been so wonderful and to stay with us so long. Let's go to Ken from Weston. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the show today.
Hey, how's it going, Lisa? Governor Lamont, I was wondering, Connecticut has a lot of laws like click it and ticket campaign and, you know, text and drive and stuff. And I noticed this weekend there was a lot of vehicles that are hydroplaned and a lot of collisions with the rain. And I just don't know why. I just figured it would be a good idea for the state to make like a, when it rains and your wipers are on, maybe cut the speed limit in half, because a lot of times people try to stop and there's like tons of questions, you know, like on 25 and Route 8 and 95 and all the major expressways. I mean, what do you think about that?
Can I, well, two things. A, I think it makes a pretty good sense. And B, why the hell do I have to pass a law every time people ought to use better common sense.
So true.
To the degree to which you're pointing out, a lot of people are driving really fast, and you ought to slow down. You ought to slow down when you're hydroplaning and the such. I wish people would just use their common sense to do that and not make us change the law, but somebody ought to look at.
Thank you very much.
Yes? Yeah, and they had to slow down, move over law as well. So, I mean, there's just so many things that could be done to make, transportation a lot more safe, you know?
Yeah, but, Ken, I agree with the governor. It comes down to this. You're supposed to drive responsibly. Every law in the book can be written, and if you're negligent, you're negligent. If you're hydroplaning and going too fast, you're already breaking the law.
Yeah, yeah. I figured just, mention it to the governor.
But thank you. Thank you for the call. Governor, Governor, you're an alum of Harvard and Yale. So what happens at the Harvard-Yale game? Who are you rooting for? That's what I want to know.
For the first time, I was 100% on the Connecticut side, which was the Yale side.
Okay.
And, it was a wild game. You probably saw there were a number of protesters that closed things down for close to an hour.
Were you there?
I was there all in and around global warming and having both those universities, take it more seriously. And that was the message they had. I finally got out in the field and I encouraged everybody to follow me. Let's get off the field and I'll spend as much time as you want. I can tell you what we're doing here in Connecticut. Make sure we get to a carbon free future. And I'd love to hear from you what more we should be doing.
You know, the endowments between Harvard and Yale are $70 billion and more than the budgets of many small countries in the world. So they really can have a huge impact. But it's not that black or white, because some of the companies that have made their fortunes in fossil fuels are also divesting into sustainable resources. So it's not so black and white, is it, Governor?
It's not, but what we've done in Connecticut is we're the only state that has said, I want to be carbon free in our grid by 2040. We've shut down the final coal burning plant. We made an enormous investment in wind. So I really wanted to make my case to these students that Connecticut is a leader here, and we should be doing more.
Thank you. Governor Lamont, I want to thank you for coming on. I hear you're going to make this a monthly segment. Feel free to come in the studio. I would love to have you come in the studio. We'll take some pictures, all that good stuff, and I can get to shake your hand in person. But we really appreciate your time, and the listeners to the show really appreciate having the opportunity to speak with you directly.
I get some good feedback, and weigh stations and such. Those are some thoughts I'm going to pursue.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, happy Thanksgiving. Lisa, same to you, and I hope I see you soon.
Happy Thanksgiving. 7 minutes before the hour on WICC 600, WICC600.com, The Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back. This show goes by so quickly, I can't believe how quickly it's going by. 203-333-9422, 203-333-9422. Listen, before we get to a lot of local news in the next hour, and believe me, I'm going to take on Danbury Hospital, and they're suing so many of their patients for small claims matters because they charge too much to begin with. Let's be real. At 203-333-9422, I just have to tell you a little bit about China. Now, I could talk about China for an entire show, but China looms so much in the background and foreground of our world right now that we can't have a good radio show without at least remembering to be conscious of how China is subjugating a billion people on the planet. And one of the great stories that will be written in human rights history is the uprising of Hong Kong. And it's not an accident. It's because the people there remember what it was like to be free. And they gave it a generation from 1997 to 2019. They watched over the last 20 years as what they recalled of common law and neutral judges and due process of law has been whittled away by mainland China. Now, Hong Kong is very definitely part of China. It's not Taiwan. It's not another island. It's connected to China. But it has the historical vestiges of freedom under British rule. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam had to promise that her government will, quote, seriously reflect after this weekend's local election results returned massive gains for pro-democracy candidates. And just think how brave it must have been for these candidates to announce that they were pro-democracy. Local media is reporting that 17 out of 18 district councils are now controlled by pro-democracy councillors. This is the first election since the wave of anti-Beijing protests began, with an unprecedented turnout of over 71%. It is obviously being seen as a denouncement of Carrie Lam's leadership and a show of support for the protest movement, as Beijing has tried to claim that a small, vocal minority are really the people behind this protest. But Lam said the government respected the results and it would listen to the opinions of members and seriously reflect. And here is the thing. This is happening in the context of a country in which highly classified Chinese government documents that were recently leaked detail that China has a manual for running mass detention camps. They hold hundreds of thousands of Uyghur Muslims. Uyghur, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, U-Y-G-H-U-R. Uyghur Muslims and other minorities in the Xinjiang region. They're called the China Cables, and pay attention because you're going to be reading and hearing about these. And this is basically the 21st century of concentration camps. They have the camps are to be run as high security prisons. They have strict discipline, punishments, and no escapes. And they are using mass surveillance and a predictive policing algorithm to analyze personal data. I mean, it's extraordinary. And we need to be paying attention because 1 billion people are under the rule of communist China. It is the top of the hour. I'm Lisa Wexler, WICC 600, WICC600.com. Stay tuned for more information important to you and your participation as well.